Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay, and today we have in the studio with us Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. Sister Denise, very warm welcome to you.
Thank you.
The topic of today's show is inner moral authority. The type of dialogue that we're going to be taking up is called the Socratic method, and by that we mean the art of putting questions to an individual in order to elicit the clear expression of truth. And today, as you will see from the content of this show, Sister Denise will be sharing with us some of her ideas and her wisdom that she has gained being a teacher of spirituality for over 4 decades. The purpose of the show is to debunk a lot of myths that people have about the title, to question, to analyze, and to dialogue the conventional values that people hold, to see why people do what they do, and to look at things like where does our morals come from, and how can it be sustainable in today's day and age. So, Sister Denise, thank you very much for joining us, and a very, very warm welcome again to today's show.
Thank you.
So, inner moral authority, why is this relevant to the times that we're living in?
Usually, people are strongly influenced by what I call the external moral authorities, which are their parents, first of all, their teachers, the education system, their spiritual mentors, and their religious and cultural context. And it is from these three external moral authorities that they are trained in the questions of moral and ethical values. Now, what I feel is that the people who are occupying the positions of parents, teachers, and religious leaders are themselves flawed, what I call body conscious. That means they're not aware of themselves as spiritual beings necessarily. They are carrying along with themselves a line of moral and ethical philosophy which presupposes that the person is a physical body. Now, people absorb these attitudes and they internalize them and they make them their own, so that the external moral authorities invade, as it were, the inner being and become the inner moral authority, which is then transmitted to the next generation as an external moral authority. And so the same kind of moral and ethical way is carried on from generation to generation. Now, when I talk about the inner moral authority, it means that you are really deeply questioning the morals, the values, and the ethical beliefs and principles that you have been given as a legacy from the previous generation. You really need to see whether you do espouse that or whether you don't. Now, I feel that the traditions of the values, ethics, and morality that this generation has received have actually failed people, because I find three problems with conventional morality. The first problem is that it tends to be punitive. And the second problem is that it tends towards double standards. one law for me, another law for you. The third problem is that it tends to be hypocritical. And so because of these problems being inherent in the traditions that we have received, it means that we are agreeing to be punitive in our attitudes, that is, vengeful. We're agreeing to have double standards and consider double standards to be correct when the actual meaning of the term is that is incorrect. We are saying that, it's okay to be corrupt when morality and ethics actually means it's not okay to be corrupt. So by pointing out these, what I feel are fundamental flaws in the received wisdom that we have, I'm saying that I want us to really look at it and see, okay, what is it that I am being driven by? So what I feel is very important is the voice of conscience, because it comes from inside. Now, the name of our program is Values, Virtues, Ethics, and Morality, which is four principles. Ethics, morality, and values derive from society, from the thinkers, from people. Virtues, I feel, do not derive from people. They're not handed down the way values, ethics, and morality are. Virtues, I would say, are coming from deep within, and the origin of virtues is actually the being of God and the ability of ourselves to cultivate virtues is connected with our relationship as spiritual beings with God the Supreme Being. So, in order for us to develop an inner moral authority, we have to really take a good look at the values, ethics, and morality that we have received and check them against the principles of spirituality to see whether we feel that they are indeed valid. And that has to be done individually on a ethic by ethic, moral by moral, value by value, which means there's quite a lot of work.
Yes, it does.
But this is really what I feel is the important work to be done.
So Denise, the way we function is that we get up in the morning, we tend to our personal needs, we get into the car, we go to work, we fetch our children from school, then we go home, we watch a bit of TV, interact with the family, go to bed. There's not much depth in that. Okay? Now, what you're asking for is intense self-study. And most people are not like that. Are you saying that people should actually pause and become like that?
What I'm saying is perhaps even just if you're sitting down, watching or participating with the two of us in this conversation, in this inquiry, it means that you're giving time to yourself. Mm. Even if you're doing all those other regular things, but you're also giving time to yourself. That is really, really good. I think that we cannot be totally and completely preoccupied with the self to the exclusion of all else. That would be very unbalanced. But to give time, some people will give a lot of time to these things, but at least to give some time is to really sustain yourself spiritually, and that's very beneficial.
Okay, so does one reach one's own real self by just introspection, or do you take external help to establish your own inner moral authority? Because it takes quite a lot of courage for you to say to yourself, what my mom and dad taught me worked for me up until now, but now I'm becoming a different person, so I'm going to discard that in favor of something better.
I think it doesn't come quite like that. I think that as a person is growing up, they will notice from time to time something that's incoherent, something that's inconsistent, and it is actually the voice of conscience saying, wait a minute, what are they saying? You know, and then you begin to see that there is a sort of inner conflict between your loyalty to the traditions that you're receiving and then your independent thought. Now, there are many people who will not notice this, but I think quite a lot of people will. And then a point comes in a person's life where they're really becoming adult, they're responsible for themselves. These things will be more important because you have to set the compass of your life.
Hmm.
And if you say, well, I'm just going to carry on in the same way as my parents have done, and their parents and their parents and their parents, it's a kind of almost a ritual life. And there are cultures where life is quite ritualized and very traditional. Then there are other people who are more independent thinkers, maybe more liberal. Maybe they will say, well, the traditions don't make total sense to me. There's too much blind faith. Things like this. And they will really start to think. So what is me, the inner moral authority, as opposed to an internalized external moral authority? Because if I internalize all these other people who are my mentors in the early part of my life, it means that I never really decided for myself that I'm going to go with it or not, you see, which means you kind of abnegate responsibility.
Mm.
And if something goes wrong, well, it's the tradition that's at fault. But actually, no, I'm at fault because I took on the tradition without questioning, you see. So what I'm saying is, if you want to be accountable, if you choose to consider yourself accountable and expect to be held accountable for your attitudes, positions, actions, and so on, then you really need to think what they are and really decide, I, the self, I'm going to operate on the basis of these principles because in my considered opinion, they are right. And they are right for me. I'm not going to impose them on anybody else, but I will follow what I consider is right until the time comes when it seems not to be right, and then I'll reconsider it and reset, you see.
Yeah.
Because otherwise there's an inconsistency, a fundamental inconsistency between who you are and what you do.
Mm.
And so you would be one thing on the inside, something else on the outside, and you would be a hypocrite. And that is not considered as a very good thing. So if you accept something that's coming from the outside and you have a different approach from the inside, you say that you stand for something and then really you stand for something else, it means you have not integrated the different parts of your life and you haven't reconciled all the different elements, which means that you're not really a self actuated person, so that you are not kind of real. You see? So I think, to me, one of the important motivating factors in a person's life is the urge to be authentic. And so if I'm authentic, that means I'm true to myself, all the different parts of my personality, my being, my reasoning, my mind, my emotions, how I do things, how I'm motivated, they all line up, you see, then I'm straight.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that means honest, I'm for real.
Mm.
Otherwise, I'm a mixture of all sorts of things that don't fit. Then I'm a fragmented person, you see. And then it's not strong, you see.
This is obviously a long-term thing. Does it require on a situation-by-situation basis for a person to sit down with himself and decide, this is the type of person I want to be? Because you need a level of spiritual ambition to get to where you've just described. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm familiar with worldly ambition, I'm familiar with achieving career goals, I'm familiar with getting the car of one's dreams, etc. But what you're talking about is a certain amount, that's all, the only way I can describe it, it's spiritual ambition. Now, where does one even get that from?
I think the archetypes are maybe something that you can refer to. You know, in psychology they speak of archetypes, in mythology they speak of archetypes, the different types of person, because ultimately a person wants to know, okay, what am I, who am I, how do I work, you know, how am I going to relate with myself? Because if I don't know who I am, then how am I going to go out and extend myself in my relationships with other people? And I have to stand for something. If I don't know what I stand for, then I don't know who I am. So you are influenced strongly. Your sense of identity, your functionality in the society is very strongly influenced by the external moral authorities. But then, who am I? Because the day is going to come when people are going to look to me for how should you live your life, you see. So this inner moral authority then becomes an external moral authority for someone. So my ethics, values, and principles had to be based on what I hold to be true. And if my paradigm is I'm a spiritual being, then my foundation of my ethics and values cannot be the materialist paradigm. It has to be the paradigm of spirituality, which is something new in this world, which means I have to formulate it and frame it, in a sense, brick by brick.
Okay, so where would one get support for embarking on such an ambitious project? Because it's very noble, but it's also very ambitious. And this person will be literally going against the grain of humanity, because very few people fall into this category that you just described. For example, a person might think, okay, honesty is important to me. But what you're speaking of is recreating the self.
Yes.
Yes. So you said that it requires time and attention. But what are the other elements that is required for somebody to have, to look himself in the eye at any point in his life and say, my conscience is 100% clear? How does one get to that?
I think if you have one or two other human beings who you consider to be great, or who you consider to embody the kind of ambition that you have, that I want to be a person like this, then you have an example. Examples are very important, because you see, you know, the details of how a person lives, how a person handles different situations. The other thing is, I think, in your connection with God, the Supreme Being, because you're comparing yourself with that ideal, and you're moving yourself step by step, slowly, so that the difference between what you are and that ideal, which is contained in the being of God, so you want to narrow the gap, narrow the difference between the Supreme Being and a mere human being, you see. Mm-hmm. And so the life work of narrowing that difference seems to me to be a very worthwhile thing to do, and you become more and more similar to God and more away from those things that are really not the real you. You see, there are many people who are fake. There are many people who don't know who they are. There are many people who are influenced by people who may be negative influences, maybe impressive people, but ultimately negative, because people model themselves on famous people, on celebrities, on, you know, those who they think are important, you see, and then they say, okay, I want to be like that, you see. I think it's important for a person to decide, you know, who you're going to model yourself on. People look for role models, and there are celebrities, famous people, whatever. In the world we live in today, the role models tend to be people who are very flashy, who have plenty of vices, who are very rich, who, you know, may not suit my idea of an interesting role model. For me, someone who really knows the laws of karma and lives by them, someone who really applies the principles of spirituality that I find particularly fascinating, that would be a role model for me, you know. And I have been a kind of apprentice of Daddy Janki, who is the administrative head of the Brahma Kumaris at this time, and some of the other senior yogis within the Brahma Kumaris who I have sort of checked with my ethical microscope, if you can see, just to see, you know, are these people for real? Do they really walk their talk, you see? And when you test someone and check someone and they check out, then you say, yes, okay, let me look closely and let me really develop myself along the lines of these people. Plus, you don't just become a carbon copy of someone, but you develop yourself according to your own studies of spiritual knowledge, according to the insights you gain through your own meditations and your own contemplations, and you become, you know, a work of art as far as possible, you see.
That's actually quite a beautiful image, a spiritual work of art. Okay, a lovely, lovely image. So, I have to ask this question. What price do you pay for becoming such?
I think that's
very expensive.
There is a price. It's very expensive. But if you're rich, then you can pay.
Okay. Explain that in human terms, please.
When you live a spiritual life, you're busy trying to do good karma, trying to accumulate the power of yoga, the light that comes from a connection with the Supreme Being. You are enriching yourself as you go along, little bit by little bit. And every so often you get a real big test. And tests are very often tests of faith, tests of moral courage, these type of things. These are the expensive things. And so, if you are weak, you'll fail the test. If you pass the test, it makes you stronger, but it also presumes that you are strong enough to pass the test. So it's a matter of growing and bringing oneself to a progressively refined state of being. And you pay the price of, I don't know how you would say, sometimes you have to pass through pain, sometimes you have to pass through other people don't approve of you, or they don't like you because you're different, you may be rejected, many things like this that are prices you pay in the world anyway. So the spiritual world is another world, but if you're prepared to pay those prices, because the most important thing is that when you leave your body, you carry your whole self with you, but you leave behind all your possessions. If you're operating on the base of the materialist paradigm, all your accumulated things, you don't take anything with you. But if you're operating on the base of the spiritual paradigm, then you take your, you know, as far as possible, perfected self with you, And then your next incarnation is very much influenced by that effort of what you do in this incarnation, which to me is a very good investment in my future.
Yes, Denise, most of us are highly influenced by the external, by our physical bodies, by our responsibilities, jobs, family, technology, etc. Now, everything that you described is the internal, invisible world.
Mm.
How does one pay attention to the invisible world if it's so intangible and you're like an astronaut of your inner space? How do you live like that and do it successfully, become a successful person internally, or somebody who has a high conscience, somebody who's no longer ordinary, as you so articulately put it earlier? And how then do you still maintain your relationship with the external world? Because we're still living in the real world.
I think...
Because when you're doing some inner navigation, you have to do it alone. Being inside alone can be very scary.
Yes, but I think it's very important to understand yourself, and myself is one that can be alone. I know how to be alone. It is taught to us in spiritual practice, you must be prepared to be alone because ultimately you are alone. And so you have to get comfortable with that scary place and get comfortable with just yourself. And when you practice to be independent of the madding crowd, as it were, you find that there's just yourself, there's your relationship with the Supreme Being, and there is the consequences of your actions, there's an atmosphere, a fragrance, a vibration that is you, and when you are in the material world, the relationship with the material world is connected with that, what you have created inside, and it becomes like that.
Okay.
Okay. But I would also say I'm not a person who is so gregarious as most people would be. I tend to spend time in my own company. I do a lot of thinking. I do a lot of creating, and that is, you know, that is me. So you need to understand yourself.
Okay. Okay, we'll have to take up that last aspect at another time. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of today's show. So Sister Denise has shared what it means to have inner moral authority. And as most of you have heard, it means to reestablish your own set of, rules and regulations that work for you instead of something that worked for the people around you or people that you've met in the past. She spoke of the price that one has to pay, but the message that I received from Sister Denise's talk is that you are worth it. Everything that she spoke of is learning to build you as an individual. You can only benefit from it. It's impossible to experience a loss as a result of making such effort. So it's a very beautiful message and a very empowering one, and also a very personal one. What Sister Denise shared is that one needs courage to embark on this journey, but the question I think that you need to ask yourself is, are you worth it? That's the bottom line. Thank you, Sister Denise, for your wisdom, your insight. I hope that you've learned something from today's talk, and I hope that you're able to put it into your practical life. Thank you, and goodbye.